Corbett Report Radio. I am your host, James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and you're tuned into Republic Broadcasting on this 22nd of March, 2012. So thank you once again for tuning in for tonight's broadcast as we go through tonight's the news that is breaking around the world. And of course, in the second half of the program, we have James Impilato of FoodWorldOrder.com to talk about all the latest from food, health, and environment. But before we get into that, I think we have to get into this, and this is from quote-unquote scientific, quote-unquote American. It appeared in the editorial pages of that esteemed magazine last week. Effective world government will be needed to stave off climate catastrophe. Let me read that again for those who are hard of thinking out there, or those for whom are who are just not awake enough to be paying attention enough to have the chills running down their spine. Effective world government will be needed to stave off climate catastrophe. And here we go, after years and years of us being called crazy, kooky conspiracy theorists for believing that there's any type of game afoot to actually implement world government on the back of the phony carbon dioxide scare. Oh, you're just one of those kooky conspiracy theorists. Until they start openly calling for quote-unquote effective world government in order to stave off the climate catastrophe. And then it's, well, that's perfectly reasonable. We need some sort of world governmental body in order to counteract this scourge of life-giving CO2 gas. But here we are, folks, here in the esteemed pages of the revered Scientific American, which for years and years has been on this climate change, global warming, whatever they want to call it next week, bandwagon. And here they are hyping up the idea of not only effective government, ha ha ha, a contradiction in terms, but effective world government, no less. Oh, yes, I'm sure that would be the answer to all of our ills. Reading from this despicable treachery, quote, almost 6 years ago, I was the editor of a single topic issue on energy for Scientific American that included an article by Princeton University's Robert Sokolo that set out a well-reasoned plan for how to keep atmospheric carbon dioxide concentrations below a planet livable threshold of 560 parts per million. Blah, blah, blah. Since doing that issue, I've come to the conclusion that the technical details are the easy part. It's the social engineering that's the killer. Moonshots and Manhattan projects are child's play compared to needed changes in the way we behave. And he goes on to start talking about how the UN needs to get a bigger backbone, and basically we need an organization that even exceeds the United Nations in its scale, its scope, in its reach into the lives of people all around the world in order to tell them what they can and cannot do in the post-industrial CO2-scared world. Because, in case you hadn't heard, folks, carbon dioxide is the most dangerous scourge the planet has ever faced, and the only way we will be able to combat it is through effective world government. Or so they want us to believe. And this is, of course, exactly what we've been talking about for years now, pointing out that this entire ruse is a scheme in order to implement the greater centralization of power, greater control in the hands of a very few, the unbelievable riches that come along with the billionaires who have made their fortunes off of the back of this scam, the Al Gores and everyone else who makes money off of promoting this fear-mongering. And then, of course, there's the mainstream Scientific American and other such publications that go along to get along with this new paradigm of carbon dioxide being the biggest evil on the planet. And now they're deigning to tell us, lo and behold, the technocracy will come and save the day. All we need is a big world government to come along with those scientists at the top to tell us how to live our lives. And it's exactly unfolding exactly the way we've been talking about it for years now. And now that it is, and now that the agenda is out in the open, I'm sure the critics will be saying, oh, well, it's perfectly reasonable to have world government in this case. At any rate, we'll continue breaking down the news and information tonight on Corbett Report Radio right after these messages. A policy article, authored by several dozen scientists, appeared online March 15th in Science to acknowledge this point. Human societies must now change course and steer away from critical tipping points in the Earth's system that might lead to rapid and irreversible change. This requires fundamental reorientation and restructuring of national and international institutions toward more effective Earth system governance and planetary stewardship. The report summarized 10 years of research evaluating the capability of international institutions to deal with climate and other environmental issues, an assessment that found existing capabilities to effect change sorely lacking. The authors called for a constitutional moment at the upcoming 2012 UN Conference on Sustainable Development in Rio in June to reform world politics and government. Among the proposals, a call to replace the largely ineffective UN Commission on Sustainable Development with a council that reports to the UN General Assembly, an attempt to better handle emerging issues related to water, climate, energy, and food security. The report advocates a similar revamping of other international environmental institutions. Unfortunately, far more is needed. To be effective, a new set of institutions would have to be imbued with heavy-handed transnational enforcement powers. There would have to be consideration of some way of embracing head-in-the-cloud answers to social problems that are usually dismissed by policymakers as academic naivete. In principle, species-wide alteration in basic human behaviors would be a sine qua non, but that kind of pronouncement also profoundly strains credibility in the chaos of the political sphere. Some of the things that would need to be contemplated: how do we overcome our hardwired tendency to discount the future, valuing what we have today more than we might receive what we might receive tomorrow? Would any institution be capable of installing a permanent crisis mentality lasting decades, if not centuries? How do we create new institutions with enforcement powers way beyond the current mandate of the UN? Could we ensure against a malevolent dictator who might abuse the power of such organizations? End quote. Oh my, if that doesn't send shivers down your spine and enrage you at the same time, I can't understand what you're thinking. Here in the pages of Scientific American, they are arguing for effective world government to stave off the climate catastrophe and truly talking about a world governmental institution to inculcate a crisis mentality in the public lasting decades, if not centuries. And yes, folks, that is a direct quote. Yes, they want to institute a world government that will rule as if we are in a crisis for decades, if not centuries, and then at the very end of that paragraph, they have the gall to ask, could we ensure against a malevolent dictator who might abuse the power of such organizations? Let's take a look at history and see if those types of powers have ever been abused by anyone with those powers. I wonder if we could ever find an example of a malevolent dictator rising to power, as opposed to the benevolent dictators that the perfect angels descended from heaven that apparently the author of this editorial believes will be in control of this benevolent world government that only wants to tell every single person on the earth how to live their lives in their own best interests and to save the earth. That's what it's all really about. I mean, yes, people have dreamed for decades, if not centuries, if not millennia, about ruling the earth. I mean, that's only been the goal of every malevolent dictator in history, but no one actually really wants to set it up, except for good causes like staving off climate catastrophe. That's what this is all about, and there's nothing more to this agenda. Well, obviously, if you're listening to this broadcast, you are probably on the side of people who understand what is wrong with the idea of effective world government. I can barely get those words out of my mouth without either laughing or crying, because unfortunately that's pretty much what it amounts to, the absolute atrocity of the idea of effective world government telling us what to do in a permanent crisis mentality lasting decades, if not centuries. And I think we don't have to look very far afield to understand how a government can not only how it can become a type of malevolent dictatorship where powers are abused, but how it inevitably devolves into that. And we are watching that happen, even if it is in a type of slow motion. It's certainly gaining pace now, even right in the United States itself. And yet more startling information on that front came out in Wired magazine last week, an incredible article by James Bamford in Wired.com. I really hope that all of you have checked it out. If not, I hope you do check it out, because I cannot stress how important this insider information is. Of course, James Bamford has been writing on the NSA and what it's been up to for years. He's the author of The Shadow Factory, the ultra-secret NSA from 9/11 to the eavesdropping on America. He's been instrumental in breaking the stories about the NSA spying hubs in the back room of AT&T and other telecom companies. He's been there in the thick of things, and this article goes into incredible depth about a very, very troubling new development. The article is called "The NSA is Building the Country's Biggest Spy Center. Watch What You Say." And it goes to talk about a new data center that's being built in Utah and the implications of this. And I'll just read a little bit from this article, once again from Wired.com, and you can find the link from the show notes for today's episode, corbettreport.com/radio. Under construction by contractors with top-secret clearances, the blandly named Utah Data Center is being built for the National Security Agency. A project of immense secrecy, it is the final piece in a complex puzzle assembled over the past decade. Its purpose? To intercept, decipher, analyze, and store vast swaths of the world's communications as they zap down from satellites and zip through the underground and undersea cables of international, foreign, and domestic networks. The heavily fortified $2 billion center should be up and running in September 2013. Flowing through its servers and routers and stored in near bottomless databases will be all forms of communication, including the complete contents of private emails, cell phone calls, and Google searches, as well as all sorts of personal data trails, parking receipts, travel itineraries, bookstore purchases, and other digital pocket litter. It is, in some measure, the realization of the Total Information Awareness Program created during the first term of the Bush administration, an effort that was killed by Congress in 2003 after it caused an outcry over its potential for invading Americans' privacy. But this is more than just a data center, says one senior intelligence official who until recently was involved with the program. The mammoth Bluffdale Center will have another important and far more secret role that until now has gone unrevealed. It is also critical, he says, for breaking codes. And code breaking is crucial because much of the data that the center will handle, financial information, stock transactions, business deals, foreign military and diplomatic secrets, legal documents, confidential personal communications, will be heavily encrypted. According to another top official also involved with the program, the NSA made an enormous breakthrough several years ago in its ability to cryptanalyze or break unfathomably complex encryption systems employed by not only governments around the world, but also many average computer users in the U.S. The upshot, according to this official, everybody's a target. Everybody with communication is a target. Once again, folks, that is from an absolute groundbreaking article by James Bamford in Wired. Just came out last week. I really hope that you will get this article and get it out to everyone. It is absolutely unfathomable the extent to which the NSA is rolling along its absolute total spy grid, its complete and utter spy grid, watching over everything that is being said and done by everyone who is connected to communication, whether telephonic or internet or otherwise. And it is absolutely a nightmare grid that we're moving into. And I certainly hope that people understand the reference that was made in that section of that article that I was reading to the Total Information Awareness Office, the TIA program, that, as that article states, was started under the Bush administration but was killed off, quote-unquote killed off in 2003 by Congress because of the creepy factor of it, where basically they were trying to get a database that would contain all of the publicly available information that the government could possibly get its hands on each and every citizen, credit cards and financial transactions and histories and everything, and assemble it into a database that they could then be data mined. The symbol was the all-seeing eye of Horus radiating the earth. Certainly nothing at all to see there, right, folks? And they say they killed it off in 2003, but later it was admitted it was basically just going on, but it wasn't called the TIA anymore. They just changed the name. And yet more indications of the the TIA, the Total Information Awareness Program, still at work, still operative, still going on, and still being implemented in law, comes from the New York Times, which ran an article under the rather bland headline, U.S. Relaxes Limits on Use of Data in Terror Analysis. But the far more accurate headline comes from blacklistednews.com, U.S. Resurrects Shuttered Bush Administration Total Information Awareness Data Mining Program. This came out just earlier today. Quote, the Obama administration is moving to relax restrictions on how counterterrorism analysts may retrieve, store, and search information about Americans gathered by government agencies for purposes other than national security threats. Attorney General Eric Holder on Thursday signed new guidelines for the National Counterterrorism Center, which was created in 2004 to foster intelligence sharing and serve as a terrorism threat clearinghouse. The guidelines will lengthen to 5 years from 180 days, the amount of time the center can retain private information about Americans when there is no suspicion that they are tied to terrorism, intelligence officials said. The guidelines are also expected to result in the center making use more copies of entire databases and data mining them using complex algorithms to search for patterns that could indicate a threat. They set off civil liberties concerns among privacy advocates who invoke the Total Information Awareness Program. And this article goes on to talk about TIA and its role in all of this. Once again, effective world government is the absolute most horrific thing that could be imagined if that is what is really being proposed. And unfortunately, it already has been. More right after this. Quarter Report Radio, friends, here on Republic Broadcasting on this 22nd of March 2012, as we go over and break down the latest headlines, news, and information from around the world. And of course, we're waiting for James Evan Pilato to appear on the line in the next segment to start going over foodworldorder.com. But tonight we're going over the laughable concept of effective world government in the name of climate catastrophe. So we have broken down a couple of articles on that front. Once again, of course, all the articles cited in this and every episode of the broadcast will be available in the show notes at CorbettReport.com/radio. So please go there if you are interested in getting these articles directly. And on a side note, please excuse if you hear any beeps or bloops in the background. I am, even as I speak, burning some copies of my 2010 video archive DVD for some of the people out there who have put in their orders in the last few days. So once again, thank you so much for all your support out there. Of course, Corbett Report Radio and all of the Corbett Report media is brought to you by you, so I really do rely on your support. And of course, when you get a 2010 video archive DVD or any of my other DVDs, you not only get to support the Corbett Report, but you also get some news and information that you can use for yourself, and of course, you're free to spread and make copies of and hand out to friends, family, or complete strangers to help get the word out on these important issues. But on that note, we have a couple of callers waiting patiently on the line, so let's go to your calls. We have Ralph in Florida. Ralph, thank you so much for calling in tonight. What's on your mind?
Yes, hello. This is my first time calling. I have a question. I came in a piece of information about the NSA developing some kind of supercomputer that can actually tag all the type of things that you're talking about, the conversations and, you know, eavesdrops and find all these kinds of data. Is that what you're talking about, that new...
That's exactly right, yes. And in this James Bamford article on Wired.com, it goes into a lot of detail about this new data center they're getting and all of the capabilities that this is going to have, including some type of decryption capabilities that they have that is far beyond anything that the public knows about that presumably can crack any type of encryption you might have on your personal computer. So basically the idea is that the NSA can and is looking at anything and everything out there right now.
I was looking at a picture of it. It looks like a giant crystal ball. did you ever see a picture of it?
I haven't seen a picture of that, no. Do you know where that's from?
Well, I have the article. I have the article on Google. If you want to look at my account, it's Ralph Cloud. Just research Ralph Cloud.
Mm-hmm.
and I have that piece there. But it looks like a large crystal ball, and that's what it looks like anyway. I don't know if that's,
an oracle for them to look into our private lives, I suppose. But absolutely. I mean, we've known for so long that the NSA is doing this and that they do have technologies that are obviously far behind whatever they've rolled out for the public. But to have it in black and white from someone like James Bamford, who has all of the inside sources at the NSA, I mean, it's just incredible. It's so important for people to get this out, especially to people who don't understand just how far into the spy grid we already are.
You are an encyclopedia, of information. I've been looking at some of your articles, and you do have a very good database on different things. I want to ask you a question. It's probably off the topic. But Iran can actually pull the plug on 11 European. Or NATO, basically, NATO nations. Given that this is the world power, the last standing world power, I guess. Where is the power of all this, where's all the power when Iran can actually cause more problems that we might think not to be?
Well, that's an excellent question, and it's an excellent point, and one that I've raised, for example, with Bob Chapman in my weekly interviews with him. And as he pointed out, this EU sanctions of Iranian oil is really shooting themselves in the foot. I mean, it's hurting the European Union at least as much as it would be hurting Iran, if not more so, because obviously they are relying on that oil. And I think part of the calculus is perhaps that this is not actually meant to solve the problem so much as exacerbate it. And when the public starts crying out for the Iranian oil, then that's the green light to go in and attack. So I think in some ways they are actually demonstrably hurting themselves, although of course we've seen in recent days that Japan and certain other countries are getting breaks from the Iranian embargo that the U.S. has set up. So when they need the oil, they can use it. But basically it's a type of psyop. And I think you're right. I think Iran does have some absolute ace cards up their sleeves. But it's the question to which all of this isn't puppeteered at a certain level. I mean, to what extent is Ahmadinejad just another type of controlled opposition that ultimately is playing into the whole divide and conquer strategy, whereby they can start the wars and they can build them up, because Ahmadinejad plays to his audience just as much as Obama or whoever else plays to their audience. And he's a warmonger and certainly not someone to be revered in any light. I mean, it sets us into that dichotomy where we think if this person is a bad person, then their enemy must be a good person. But that's not necessarily the case. So it gets quite complicated that way.
Yeah. It's not difficult for me to put it in perspective on the spiritual side. But trying to put it together from the other side, from the secular side, from the government, and so forth. It's very difficult because the.
I hear you, Ralph. I hear you. On that note, we'll go to break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
James Corbett says no, friends. James Corbett says no. Here we are on Corbett Report Radio, and tonight, of course, is Thursday night. So, as usual, we're going to be talking to our regular Thursday night guest, James Evan Pilato of FoodWorldOrder.com, about the latest food, health, and environment issues from around the world. I'm always looking forward to that. But before we do, we also have another caller waiting patiently on the line. So let's go to the calls once again. We have Chris in Las Vegas. Chris, you're on the air with James Corbett and James Evan Pilato.
And what a distinct pleasure it is to be on with two educated, intelligent gentlemen as yourselves.
My ears are burning. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, since your topic was the new cloud information intel gathering data assimilation center of the fusion center concept under the DHS and other NSA and DOD programs, I thought it might be appropriate to talk about where those documents and those concepts actually were consummated and contemplated from. And I know you know about the Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars Technocracy Training Manual for the CIA's academics instructions and asset development programs.
I do indeed, but I don't know the nature of the document. From what I understand, that was something that was discovered in a photocopier that was meant to be thrown away, and that's my understanding of where that document comes from.
Indeed, although I have read the document very distinctly, and being an electrician by trade, I understand the implications intimately. And I will tell you that the premises put forth speak in underlying codes and tones and encrypted language within the document exactly to this is the end game that was foreseen by this economic systems management human control system. And further, it emanates from the technocrats, the technocracy gurus, the scientific experts of all the different fields, consummated against us poor Goyim here on Earth. And it was put forth even further in the Strom Thurmond NDAA, National Defense Authorization Act of 1961, at 10 U.S.C. 2358.
Indeed. Thirdly, so. Well, do you have a link to that?
Oh, well, you can search it, 10 U.S.C. 2358.
I can put that in the show notes. Absolutely. Strom Thurmond's 1961, did you say, NDA?
That is correct. Also in 1961 was the BRAC Commission report on base reduction activities report from the actual BRAC came from the blueprint for the plan from peace for peace. Of course, blueprint is a 180-degree diametric suggestion to the Red Plan for Peace, which peace is communism, is war, a constant state of it. And in that particular document, it also speaks to concepts of UN control, demilitarization and depopulation of the police forces and replacement with UN troops here in America. And it comes specifically from a Senate bulletin publication number 71, it may be 72, excuse me for not recalling that distinctly. It's either 7177 or 7277. Also from 1961, and they did a commission report in 1975, I believe it was. And they speak to this, actually they give the premise of this for the TSA, Department of Homeland Security, and of course this was a Prescott Bush conceived contemplation, who it is alleged that G.H.W. Bush may likely have been one Georgi Schraff, a mentor or a undercover asset as a child to Nikolai Tesla from the Hitler inner circle.
I've also heard he was the grandson of Aleister Crowley, or is it the son?
It's possible. I don't have any intel on that particularly,
exactly.
Although the
recent
passing deathbed confession of one Mr. Otto Skorzeny had some pictures and deathbed confessions that seemed to point to this being the fact, and perhaps G.H.W. Bush was brought under Operation Flip here in America.
I have heard that myself as well. James, have you seen some of that research? James, are you there? Maybe we should bring James into the conversation, or not. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm glad that you got some sources on that. I will attempt to put them in the show notes for the episode. Any questions for myself or James?
Well, I also would note that there's a recent transportation alignment document that speaks in exactly the same militaristic encoded encrypted language terms that are only discernible by those experienced or enlightened in military speak, which has deployment terms, it talks about innovative solutions, and they're so broad-based and esoteric in nature that they could be contrived to make anything, but they relate back to smart meter technology as incorporation to this new grid monitoring scheme. Of course, the purchase centers at the markets and places where you'd shop to track your credit card purchases, your tracking of your smartphones, and all these different data gathering we'll call them fishermen's nets or worldwide webs of ensnarement to gather intel on the populace to be able to gauge the temperature or the mindset of the public so they can more accurately detect what's going on and attune their schemes of control for the global slave plantation system very precisely.
Well, unfortunately, you're right. It's all part of an agenda that's been planned out for decades, and it's all revolves around this information about everything that we're doing, and the technology is unfortunately here now to spy on everything we're doing. Fortunately, Chris, we're going to have to leave it there. We have James Evan Pilato on the line, so let's bring him up to start going over foodworldorder.com, because, again, as always, we have so much information to get through on that front. So, James, thanks again for your time tonight.
The James Bamford story, I subscribed to Wired. It came in the mail, and my jaw dropped as soon as I kind of opened the magazine. Inside the Matrix is the short version of the article title that they put on the cover. But it's the scientific dictatorship, silent weapons for quiet wars, and that can be technological, but it can also be biological. And I think a transition, James, from what you meant, an effective world government and the social engineering of the climate catastrophes. A piece from theatlantic.com, and again, these are all posted on my site, foodworldorder.com, and I mentioned, I believe, last week, a new contributor to the site that's done so much work, pretty much the majority of the work in the past week on Food World Order, is from my man, Adam. So a huge thanks to him and, you know, our friend Morgan Lesko of Wiki World Order for, again, just helping get all this information out. How engineering the human body could combat climate change. This from theatlantic.com. From drugs to help you avoid eating meat to genetically engineered cat-like eyes to reduce the need for lighting. The Atlantic has a wild interview about changes humans could make to themselves to battle climate change. And this sources back to a guy named S. Matthew Liao, L-I-A-O, I may be mispronouncing that, Human Engineering and Climate Change. And he's got the article, and you can get it in PDF, about engineering ourselves. James, would you like cat-like eyes so you could keep...
I would like them for many reasons, but not to combat climate change. But yes, I would just direct people to whatsupwiththat.com, which had a nice take on this from March 13th, where basically they said even Bill McKibben is panning this as crazy, and if Bill McKibben is panning your idea as crazy, chances are it's really crazy. So I don't think this is a topic or an idea that's going to gain much traction right now, but that they're even floating this as type of a test balloon is quite worrying, I think.
Mm-hmm. So let's get even, I don't even know if it is stranger. From the Daily Mail, glow-in-the-dark sushi made from genetically modified fish becomes latest food craze to sweep America. Sushi that glows in the dark has become the latest must-try food craze across America, inspired by genetically modified fish first bred for scientific research, and I would argue that they're still being used for scientific research, it's just on us. A video showing how to make the glowing sushi has become a huge hit online. The recipe uses Glowfish, a brand of GM fluorescent zebrafish sold by Yorktown Technologies, which are available to buy in pet shops. And the article goes on, but we've discussed these things in the past, and the article makes reference to the glowing mice. And have we also had glowing cats, James? Has that story been out there as well?
I believe so. I certainly remember glowing monkeys, and I think there were glowing cats at some point, wasn't there? Yeah, it's hard to even keep up with the monstrosities as they're being created and thrown out there, but as people might know, I did a podcast episode on the so-called skeptics recently, like Michael Shermer and people like that, and I've been looking at so much of their websites lately, and of course I've come across some of the skeptic takes on genetic engineering, which of course is a great, wonderful scientific leap forward, and anyone who doesn't think so is just a Luddite and a charlatan. Mm-hmm. And it just disgusts me how they basically say, oh, there's no difference between genetically engineering plants and foods and things and just breeding new plants and foods. It's the same thing. It's just, you know, helped along with technology. Well, I tell you what, you're a researcher out there, I'll give you 100 years. No, wait, I'll give you 1,000 years. Just breed me a fish that glows in the dark naturally without doing something like this to it. And you know, you get a prize, you get a biscuit. No, it is just such a out-in-your-face monstrosity, but there it is. It's so cute and cool, and if we can make it a fad and sell it to the public like that, I'll take it down with seconds, please.
James, straight from Monsanto.mediaroom.com. This is one that just kind of makes you scratch your head. Monsanto Company donates $100,000 on behalf of Farmer Coalition for Support of Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial. On behalf of the National Black Growers Council, NBGC, Monsanto donated $100,000 to the Washington, D.C. MLK Jr. National Memorial Foundation Project. I think this is something interesting that we see in the arts as well. And you'll see companies like, what, you know, what does Coca-Cola or Nike or any of those places care about the arts? Oh, it makes them look good and they can write it off and it's a pittance, but it's great PR.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause Monsanto is a name that's just so revered by the public, right? No, actually they have to buy any scrap of publicity they can. That's not negative. So.
And what's $100,000, really?
Yeah, exactly. What is $100,000 to a company like that?
Here is another disappointing sellout, and we grab it from Natural News. New chapter, Organics, sells out to Procter & Gamble, now, of course, joining the global corporate elite. Procter & Gamble, a global corporate conglomerate that sells a vast array of consumer products containing cancer-causing chemicals and petroleum derivatives, is now the proud owner of New Chapter Organics, which was one of the more promising nutritional supplement companies we'd seen in a while. New Chapter co-founder Paul Schulich announced, quote, "For us, this has been a dream come true. This is what we have been wanting to do since we started doing this 30 years ago. The world and the United States needs this," end quote. James, this is yet another case, and I held up and shook. We got a bottle of bee food complex from New Chapter, and it's great because it's one of the few sort of food source, food-derived vitamin B's. Burt's Bees, they sold to Clorox. You know, we've made reference to it before, but again, you know, I work at a grocery store here in Portland, and you could spend all day basically going down the shelves and going, oh yeah, that one, that's really owned by Kraft, or that's really owned by Smucker. So another kind of disappointing case, and it's going to tie into, I think, what we've already been talking about in a way. That's just another silent weapon.
And it's important to understand this isn't just reflexive anti-corporatism for the sake of anti-corporatism. There is a history behind these corporations and how they gained their conglomerates and how they amassed all their wealth and what they've used their wealth for. So when you look at Procter & Gamble, you're of course talking about Clarence J. Gamble, who was one of the founding funders of the eugenics movement in America. He was a leader in Margaret Sanger's Birth Control Federation. As Reverend Childress Jr., who was on last week about the Black Genocide, talked about, he was the person that Sanger was writing to about the Negro Project to exterminate the black weeds. He was the one that was actually the recipient of those letters from Sanger. He was funding all of the different birth control ideas they had in foreign countries around the world to make sure those brown people don't breed. And of course, this is the legacy of Procter & Gamble. Gamble was one of the founders and funders of the American eugenics movement. But now, from what I understand, one of his heirs is promoting some movie that's trying to mix 9/11 truth and things in with flying saucers and Taurus-shaped objects. So I guess we're supposed to think of the Gamble family as a good thing now.
Hmm. Is that Thrive?
I wasn't mentioning it by name, but it sure is.
Okay, sorry. Because I haven't watched it, but that's something I've had a ton of people mention that to me and ask me about it, but I've never.
Well, fair enough. If people get into this real information through things like that, good on them. But honestly, I'm not into the flying saucer, Taurus worship things, and the multi-million-dollar production on that documentary leaves me a bit cold. And asking questions about how the Gamble family is using their money now that they once used to fund eugenics, but I don't see anyone bringing that up in the interviews with him.
Well, let's maybe we'll see that dude run down Hollywood streets naked, touching himself. But I digress. James, quickly, I'll just mention some of the other things on Food World Order. Again, there is a wealth of health information available. At the center of healthcare fight, a farmer's 1942 case. This is a good piece from the New York Times that gets in kind of the background of the fight against Obamacare and how it goes back to a 1942 decision, Wickard v. Filburn. So another great way, I think, to kind of dig into the past, because, of course, you know, you're not going to hear that on your nightly news, and certainly that article wasn't on the front of the New York Times. One from ActivistPost.com, sweet victory when the science says the farm beats pharma. And it talks about, of course, all the confirmed and documented, you know, they call them condiments and spices, but they're basically the source of life and health that we've used for millennia. But again, in so many ways, they kind of just get boiled down and destroyed into, you know, something that doesn't have any nutrients to it when we could really kind of take it back. But on a bright note, James, Billboard dispenses free cakes to London commuters in bus shelters. Agricultural markets still unbalanced and unfair, farmers say. That's from civileats.com. And we reach a even longer than usual binge and purge, James, with the disgusting title of Cinnamon and Slime with your GM Fetal Soda.
That does not make me hungry enough to dig in, but I suppose we'll have to do that. We're just coming up on the break here, so we'll take a short break before we do that. But just on that Billboard story, that's a fascinating headline. What's it about?
First came the cupcake ATM. Now there's a cake dispensing billboard. With just the touch of a button, the automated fixture distributes up to 500 Mr. Kipling cakes per day. This is in the UK. I've not actually heard of these cakes. Along with a sweetened aroma to tempt London commuters, this going back to Ad Age magazine. The novel publicity stunt is part of a campaign by the British cake company to get customers to try one of their wrapped cakes. Mr. Kipling.
Mr. Kipling. Would that be Rudyard Kipling? I don't know. Anyway, interesting stuff. All right, on that note, let's take a short break. We'll be right back to finish up Food World Order here on Corbett Report Radio right after this.
There's a man who leads a life of danger.
All right, friends, we're back here on Corbett Report Radio to wrap up tonight's broadcast with James Evanpilato of foodworldorder.com. So we're breaking down all the latest food, health, and environment issues and stories from around the world. But just before we head into the binge and purge for tonight, on a side note, I was mentioning it on the broadcast last week. Of course, I am one of the world's largest Smashing Pumpkins fans. And yes, Billy Corgan, we were talking about him last night on the broadcast with Julio Rauseo. They're in Chicago, and as it turns out, apparently Billy Corgan has just done a big interview for Alex Jones in InfoWars, so that will be going up next week. Apparently he's spilled the beans even more so on chemtrails and other such issues, so I'm looking forward to that. Good on him for coming out there. It's always a big deal when a big celebrity comes out and gets a lot of people who would never, ever look at this information to look at it, so... So good on him and Alex Jones and the team there for getting that together. I'm going to be watching next week. So just thought I'd throw that in there. And unfortunately, Billy decided, I guess, not to appear on Corbett Report Radio. But there's always hope, right, James?
Absolutely. Yeah.
You never know. Or even Media Monarchy. But on that note, let's get into the binge and purge.
All right. So like I said just a little bit ago, foodworldorder.com is kind of bursting at the seams thanks to, you know, the help of new contributors that we've taken on, you know, and with the help of Morgan at Wiki World Order and Adam in Canada, another Canadian. And I think I've said before that, you know, help from Australia and Canada has always been really great for Media Monarchy. But the binge and purge, cinnamon and slime with your GM fetal soda. James, this is an even longer than usual binge and purge, so I'm only going to mention some of the key points that I think folks should check out. The top one, though, cinnamon challenge. YouTube craze gains millions of viewers, yet frightens health professionals. As I add, the copycat effect kicks in. This challenge of eating a teaspoon of cinnamon without using water can, of course, cause you to choke and die and does amazing damage to your lungs, not to mention if you may also have asthma symptoms. But there are all the videos of kids all trying it because, you know, James, maybe we should start, you know, jumping off cliff videos and
works. Yeah, we shouldn't even laugh about that because I know it would happen. Yeah. No, it's exactly right, the copycat effect. And what's the name of the author that you always cite on that?
That's Lauren Coleman.
Right.
And he runs Copycat Effect. Some of the other bits on the binge and purge that I think are important, James, an update on The soda world, Obama agency rules Pepsi's use of aborted fetal cells in soft drinks constitutes ordinary business operations. On a positive note from foodsafetynews.com, Del Monte Fresh Produce drops lawsuit threat against Oregon because our own Oregonian said that it came from a Del Monte farm in Guatemala. And so their protestations have dropped, which, of course, makes you wonder. The Department of Homeland Security plans to build a high-risk virus center in the heart of America, replacing the deadly and dangerous Plum Island lab that's off the coast of the New York and near Rhode Island, I believe. Let's move it to Kansas, to the middle of the country, so it has a nice, equal, even opportunity to infect the entire United States. Blue strawberries raise more GMO questions and so much more, James. It's all on foodworldorder.com, and I relaunch Media Monarchy Podcast tomorrow.
Exactly right. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. For anyone who doesn't know, of course, James does have his own podcast. It's been on hiatus for a little while as he switches networks, but it's going to be on Revere Radio now.
That's it. I'm stoked.
Excellent. Yeah, so am I. Looking forward to it. Episode 251, be there, be square tomorrow morning. What time?
10 a.m. Pacific time.
10 a.m. All right. And, of course, you can also get the feeds from from MediaMonarchy.com and all the other sites. So, James, thank you for your time tonight. And thank you to all of you out there for listening in and for your calls and all of your support and contact through CorbettReport.com. It's very much appreciated. And there's still one more day in the week, so I'm looking forward to doing this all again with you tomorrow night. So, until then, thanks for listening and take care.